Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in Radio DMG may or may not be the views and opinions of the DMGI's family of sites. All music used in this podcast is the property of whoever made it, and no copyright infringement is intended. God bless this albatross, and hold on tight for the awesome you're about to receive.
It's got to be the king.
And welcome to Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and today is December 25th, 2011. This is the first of three shows that we'll probably record between today and tomorrow, addressing, well, Christmas. I was originally going to get this out by Friday, and that kind of fell apart because of stuff that you have to do. So here I am. It's 2 a.m. Christmas Day. I'm still awake, so I might as well go ahead and tell you a little bit about what we're doing today. This is the first episode of a three-part present from Radio DMG. This first part is just a little bit of a Christmas greeting, and then some audio, and then the second one will be a 100% newsy episode where we go over what we kind of skipped in our over the week, and the third episode will be a glorious excess episode, and that will have stuff that'll probably be about 3 hours long. So this first one is actually going to be a little bit long because we're including, let me get into a little bit of backstory about what's included in here. We're not mentioning what it is in the outline because it's questionable copyright wise. You see, when I was growing up, I didn't watch a lot of TV. I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of playing outside. And I did a lot of listening to records. In particular, radio plays. Now, a couple of these radio plays are like from Hosanna Records or Marathon Records or Dove or Sparrow, I think it was. Well, there was a bunch of different ones. Most of my family, we had a lot of records at one point. This particular record or audio program is taped directly from the record. And we're going to give you, it's Christmas. There are a couple standbys that people like to go to on Christmas when it comes to entertainment. One of those is a Christmas carol. A Christmas carol. No, a Christmas carol. The original story by Charles Dickens about a unchristian, very miserly old person named Ebenezer Scrooge, who is visited by three ghosts, the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future, and he kind of has like a redemption story. It's a classic. Most of what you find or read in school is abridged, so if you can track down some of the earlier editions of it, pretty much anything past the 1950s is most likely abridged. If you can pick up like an older copy of it, it's definitely worth reading, especially if you can find it where it's not abridged. The story itself, A Christmas Carol, has been remade several times. We have several different live-action versions with actors like Basil Rathbone. And we have different adaptations of it, like Scrooged with Bill Murray. And there's various cartoon adaptations of it, and different adaptations of it. We've seen versions of the story end up on, say, we've seen versions of it with the Muppets or the characters from All Dogs Go to Heaven. There's been episodes of it, which are just adaptations of it from like old ABC family comedies like Family Matters or, what was the other one? Full House. You see, the whole basic redemption story that's in A Christmas Carol is very appealing, mainly because you have a character that has made drastic life decisions which lead them to be unlikable. And then by being shown the past, what their actions were in the past, what their actions are doing to people in the present, and what the consequences of bad decisions are in the future, they decide to make a radical change and fix that problem. Now, my favorite version of the Christmas Carol story is Disney's, or rather Mickey's, Christmas Carol. There was an animated film for it that Disney put out in front of the Rescuers a long time ago. But before that, there was a radio play. Now, radio plays are theater of the mind, where you have people talk and there's noises and sounds and stuff in the background. It's, I guess, the best way to describe it to people who've never really thought about radio plays or experienced them would be that you just kind of close your eyes and listen. Or, with some of these, there's a little booklet with pictures so you can kind of follow along with what's going on. This one in particular does not have that. There was a version of it put out later on. The version that I'm putting here, that's taped off of this original record, is Mickey's Christmas Carol. It has Clarence Ducky Nash as the voice of Donald Duck. You've got the original voice for Uncle Scrooge. Not the original voice for Mickey, because Walt Disney died. Because remember, Walt Disney was the original voice of Mickey. But yeah, this uses characters from Mickey and the Beanstalk, which is part of Fun and Fancy Free. If I remember correctly, it's either Fun and Fancy... Yeah, it's Fun and Fancy Free is the one that has Mickey and the Beanstalk in it. Characters from Ichabod and Mr. Toad, The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad, which was the Disney 2-in-1 movie, which had The Legend of Sleepy Hollow and Wind in the Willows in the same picture. You see, Disney did a lot of compilation films during the 1940s to 1950s or so, because their mainstream long-form animated films were not successful. Bambi, Pinocchio, those were not successes in theaters. Dumbo did fine, but there was delays and there were less than stellar box office performances for some of their more in-depth and harder to use, harder to make pictures. So what they did, because they also had some problems with staff, some animators were being sent off to World War II, and they needed money and people to put out movies. So what they did is they started compiling various shorts, like the Whale Who Wanted to Sing at the Met, or Casey at Bat, or what's another good one from that? Oh, Peter and the Wolf. They would take these smaller stories and add them together to make movies. This happened with Saludos Amigos, The Three Caliberos, Make Mine Music, Fun and Fancy Free, and Melody Time. Those were five that they did. They also did a weird live-action movie that revolved around the creation of the short based on the Reluctant Dragon. And then there was the documentary slash animated short Victory Through Air Power. They did, in order to keep up with that, they scaled that back. So Disney's had a bit of a time making short animated films. They made this short animated film based off of this radio play. But yeah, back onto the topic of radio plays. The basic idea of a radio play is you listen to it and you close your eyes and just picture what's happening there. It requires a little bit of imagination, but that's fine. Now, this particular radio play is available as an MP3 direct from Disney, and you can buy it on Amazon for really cheap. If you want a pristine copy of it, that is what I suggest you do. But I feel that pristine copies in MP3 format or the all-digital format lose a bit of the warmth and the pop, the character that recording from a record does. You see, vinyl sounds different than a CD because the sound that's generated on a record is organic. It's not digital. It's not layered. It's kind of like with a laser, you've got light reading through things. With a record, you have physical grooves, physical information. It's the difference between reading a book or reading a screen. When you're reading a screen, the information on that screen can go away quickly and be changed. With a book, that information has been printed onto it. In fact, on some printings of things, I guess you could say I really enjoy old things. And the reason I enjoy a lot of these older things is because they're less corruptible. When you go to the source of something, you can get a more perfect version of it, or a more intended version of it. Kind of like how sometimes you can go at remakes or reimaginings of an item and realize that the original's much better than the remake. Of course, that's because I really like old things. I like being a bit nostalgic, and I like my culture. I feel that I have to preserve it. It's up to us to preserve culture, and that's kind of what I'm doing. Now, yes, I'm running into a gray area legally by making this available. However, the thing to note is that in radio, you can have audio clips or sometimes whole works as long as there is a degrade in audio quality, which is what you have here in an MP3. Now, you have a bit of hiss and pop and that little warm sound that records have that permeates this particular feature. And that's not there in the MP3 version. So if you want a pristine quality version of it that's slick and there's no little noise from a record, feel free to download that. In fact, I actually suggest you support Disney and download their version that they have out there. Just keep in mind that I feel that a lot of the character and the warmth of the sound generated from a record is lost in an MP3 or in a CD. So, just a fair warning out there. So, yes, that's what I was going to give you for this episode. This is not my own content. I didn't generate this other than that I taped it using a machine that allows you to record records onto CD. And same with tapes. I have a bunch of tapes that I need to do that with. For example, the Safety Kids. That was a little thing. And I'll probably mention it and use some of the songs as illustrations in a Holding the Bridge episode. But yes, my little Christmas present to you is to share something that when I was younger had a bit of an impact on me. Going back through a lot of these old radio plays, I realized that a lot of my worldview comes from the things I've read and listened to when I was young. Now, a lot of people say that things like violent video games or violent books and movies don't affect them. But yes, everything affects you in some way or another. No matter what you may want to think, the human mind is always learning, always shaping, always moving forward. I think the good old term for it with computers is GIGO, or garbage in, garbage out. When you fill your head with too much cynicism, you become cynical. When you fill your head with too much fluff, you become fluffy. Sadly, yeah, that would explain weight gain. But no, what I feel is that sometimes it's best to cast aside that bit of cynicism and enjoy something for what it is, something positive. And I feel that going through, well, actually, I'll get into that later on in Holding the Bridge, where I'll talk about some of my base political and base moral assumptions come from things that I've read and learned over the years, or people I've met over the years. It's amazing how perceptions change that way. And looking through this particular radio play, I realized that, wow, it does stand up. There's a lot of little jokes here and there that some people may have to look it up, but a lot of these, this is some quality entertainment. It means a lot to me because it is a product I enjoy. It's something I listen to repeatedly. This and several other types of little audio plays. To me, these are like, if you're one of those people who grew up when radios were the fixture of the house, when you'd tune in to find out what was going to happen to the Lone Ranger or the Green Hornet or the early Batman serials, or what was going to happen to Buck Rogers, when you sat there, you listened and you closed your eyes and you listened using just your ears and your brain to decipher the amazing stories being told to you. Those are a time that we tend to forget in our world of 3D movies and interactive video games and such. And I feel that sometimes it's best to sit back, relax, close your eyes, and enjoy something old, something interesting, and hopefully something that you'll like just as much as I did when I was younger. So without any further explanation from myself, I proudly present Walt Disney's Mickey's Christmas Carol, courtesy of, well, that thing that I used to record it. So enjoy. Get some popcorn, some type of snack, and pop on the headphones and listen up for this, a feature presentation. Thank you.
Christmas.
Merry, Merry Christmas.
Oh, what a Merry Christmas Day.
I'm going to tell you a story. It's about Christmas. Oh, it's not the usual Christmas story. This is a scary one, all about ghosts. It was London on a cold and bitter morning, the day before Christmas, and I, Ebenezer Scrooge, was walking to my counting house.
Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas to one and all!
Give a penny for the poor. Penny for the poor.
December 24th. Just 7 years ago today, my partner, Jacob Marley, died. Old Marley. He robbed the widows, stole from the orphans, swindled the poor. They don't make men like Marley anymore. In his will, he left me enough money to pay for his tombstone. And I had him buried at sea. Oh, he'd have been proud of me. I was greeted by my faithful clerk, Bob Cratchit.
Good morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Cratchit, what are you doing with that piece of coal in your hand?
I was going to put it in the stove.
You put a piece of coal in the stove last week. What are you trying to do? Raise tomatoes?
No, I was just trying to thaw out the ink.
Bah! Get on with your work.
Mr. Scrooge, tomorrow is Christmas, and I was wondering if I could have half a day off.
Christmas, eh? Well, I suppose so. But I'll dock you half a day's pay. Now, let's see. I'll pay you 2 shillings a day.
2 shillings and a halfpenny, sir.
Oh, yes. I gave you that raise 3 years ago.
Yes, sir, when I started doing your laundry.
All right, Cratchit. Get busy while I go over my books. Oh, and here's another bundle of shirts for you.
Yes, sir.
Let's see. Macduff owes me... I owe MacDougal... money, money, money. The only thing that counts with me is money. The only thing I'm counting on is cash. The happiest time of day is when I put my coins away, lock 'em up, bolt the door and dream about mustache. As a philanthropic fella, I'm a failure. But as a miser, I'm a smash. The only thing that counts for me is M-O-N-E-Y, you see. The only thing I'm counting on is cash.
The only thing that counts with him is money.
Money!
The only thing he's counting on is gold. Nobody could exceed this individual for greed.
Scrooge is cheap, what a creep.
His heart is really cold.
But they tell you that you cannot buy contentment.
Sorry.
But that philosophy is trash.
I didn't mean it.
The only thing that counts for me is M-O-N-E-Y, you see. The only thing I'm counting on is cash.
Cash.
Money.
Merry Christmas.
And a Merry Christmas to you, Master Fred.
Well, yes, my Uncle Scrooge.
Who is there? Oh, nephew, what do you want? 'Tis a work day, you know.
Merry Christmas, Uncle Scrooge.
Humbug, I say. Bah, humbug. I'll tell you what Christmas is. It's just another work day. And any jackanapes who thinks else should be boiled in his own pudding.
Oh, but Mr. Scrooge, is it your intent to work on Christmas?
Right. You keep Christmas in your way, and I'll keep it in mine.
Ah, come on!
But, sir, Christmas is a time of year for giving, a time to be charitable, a time to be with one's family.
I say, bah, humbug!
I don't care. I say Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas!
Well said, Master Fred!
Cratchit, what are you doing?
Trying to keep my hands warm, sir.
And what are you doing here, nephew?
I've come to invite you to Christmas dinner.
Oh. I suppose you're going to have a plump goose with chestnut dressing.
Yes.
And will you have plum pudding and lemon sauce?
Yes.
With roast squab and pickled raisins?
Yes, yes.
maple spice sugar cakes?
Yes, when you come.
You daft man, you know I can't eat that stuff. Out, out, out!
But, sir, Master Fred has brought us a Christmas wreath. May I hang it on our door?
You do, and I'll hang one on you.
Here's your wreath, and a Merry Christmas.
And here's your wreath back. And bah humbug.
Merry Christmas.
And a bah humbug to you.
That boy Fred, always so full of forgiveness and love.
Yes, he always was a little weird. I'll tell you how Christmas ought to be. Everybody ought to get up early. But not to see the presents neath the tree. If Christmas cheer they're looking for, a cup of tea's enough to pour. That's the way Christmas ought to be. How about a Christmas stroll this morning? A walk to work is healthy, all agree. Let's cut out this Good Neighbor Day and add another Labor Day. That's the way Christmas ought to be. Bah, humbug! Bah, humbug! No Christmas carols for me. Bah, humbug! That's my song, and I'll sing it happily. Bah, 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 humbug! Cratchit! What is all this talk about a day off? Employees think so inconsistently. If they don't work on Christmas Day, then we shall take it from their pay. That's the way Christmas ought to be. Ooh! Customers, I'll handle this, Cratchit. Yes, what can I do for you two gentlemen?
Sir, we are soliciting funds for the indigent and destitute.
For the what? We're collecting for the poor. Oh, aha. Well, you realize if you give money to the poor, they won't be poor anymore, will they?
Well,
And if they're not poor anymore, then you won't have to raise money for them anymore.
Well, I suppose.
And if you don't have to raise money for them anymore, then you would be out of a job. Oh, please, gentlemen, don't ask me to put you out of a job. Not on Christmas Eve.
Oh, we wouldn't do that, Mr. Scrooge.
All right, both of you. Out, out, out! And take your pot and your pennies for the poor with you. What's the world coming to, Cratchit? You work all your life to get money, and people want you to give it away. What time is it?
2 minutes till closing time, sir.
Well, never mind working those 2 minutes. You may go now.
Oh, thank you, sir. You are so very kind.
Never mind that mushy stuff. Just go. Now you can come in 2 minutes early the day after Christmas to make up the time.
I will, sir. And a bah humbug to... a Merry Christmas to you, sir.
At length, the hour for shutting my counting house arrived, and with an ill will, I put on my great coat and carefully locked the door. Outside, fog and darkness had set in, and it was bitter cold. As I walked the crowded street, I took no notice of the merry people hurrying home to their loved ones.
Like you wait for a penny, sir?
I'm used to this fog, you beggar. I can find my own way. And find my way I did, to my usual melancholy tavern, to order my even more melancholy supper. Upon finishing my meager repast, I made my way through the fog to my gloomy suite of rooms. Reaching the dark yard, something strange met my eye. It was the door knocker.
Oh!
For a moment, the door knocker took on the face of my late partner,
oh!
Jacob Marley. I pinched his nose.
Oh! That's smart.
No, that can't be. Door knockers don't speak. It's simply a figment of my imagination. It's a figmation of my fagum. Bah! Humbug! I was understandably shaken by this ghostly vision. As I walked upstairs, I heard what seemed to be footsteps close behind me. They seemed to be dragging something. Chains, it would appear. No, it's... It's imagination. Yes, a fadgement of Finch. Fiddles of my fadges. Oh, here's the door. I hurried into my room and shut the door. And locked it. And chained it. And bolted it. Who is it? Ooh. Unhindered by the heavy door, the chain, the locks, and the bolts, the ghost of Jacob Marley passed into the room before my frightened eyes. A cold chill enveloped my whole body. My teeth began to chatter. My knees began to knock. And my eyes popped.
Now that you've finished the number, I'd like to talk to you.
What do you want of me? Who are you?
Ask me not who I am. Ask me who I was.
Okay, who was you?
Scrooge, don't you recognize me? Your old partner, Jacob Marley.
Jacob Marley? It is you. But you're a ghost. I can see right through you. But then I always could. And those chains. Why are you wearing those chains?
I don't know. Chains are in this year.
But Jacob, what is it you want of me?
I have an important message for you, Scrooge. You know, when I was alive, I robbed the widows and stole from the orphans and swindled the poor.
Yes, and all in the same day. Oh, you had class, Jacob, class.
Yes, but I was wrong, Ebenezer. I was so wrong. I was a penny pincher. I saved every coin. I lived on bread and water, never tenderloin. I robbed and rooked my neighbors, the kids I was unkind. And when I needed pencils, I stole them from the blind. Alas, it's much too late for me, Ebenezer, 'cause I didn't find out in time that being tight is not all right. Now I must wear these chains at night. That's why I'm singing you the song. Being tight is not all right, Ebenezer. It's all wrong. So stop and take a look now, before it's too late. For when you die, your chains will be a mighty heavy weight. So when the spirit beckons, better do as you're told. Remember, Ebenezer, you're getting very old. It may not be too late for you, Ebenezer, if you'll only find out in time that being tight is not all right. You needn't wear these chains at night. That's why I'm a-singing you this song. Being tight is not all right. It's all wrong.
Gorge.
And so, as a punishment, Ebenezer, I'm forced to carry these heavy chains throughout eternity. Maybe even longer. And they're very uncomfortable, double. And there's no hope. I'm doomed. Doomed! And the same thing can happen to you, Ebenezer Scrooge.
No, no, it can't. It mustn't. Help me, Jacob. What can I do?
Gosh, I don't know. Oh, tonight you will be visited by three spirits, a ghost. Listen to them, do what they say, or your chain will be heavier than mine.
But Jacob, tell me why.
I gotta go now. These chains are killing me. Ooh, ow, eesh.
All right, Marley. Look, careful where you're going. Watch out for that first.
Whoa!
Step. I was much shaken by this ghostly vision as I tried to go to sleep. It seemed I'd been abed only a moment when the clock started to strike the hour.
What? Well, it's about time. Haven't got all night, you know.
Who are you?
Why, I'm the ghost of Christmas Past.
Oh, I thought you'd be taller.
Listen, Scrooge, if men were measured by kindness, you'd be no bigger than a speck of dust.
Kindness is of little use in this world.
You didn't always think so. Come on, Scrooge, it's time to go.
Then go.
going to visit your past.
I'm not going out there. I'll fall.
Just hold on. Whoop. Not too tight now.
And with that, we were through the window and flying over the darkened city.
Spirit, look out! Oh! Whoa!
What's wrong, Scrooge? I thought you enjoyed looking down on the world.
Suddenly it was light, and then I saw something I remembered from a long time ago. As I peered through the window, I beheld a Christmas party in progress.
Spirit, I believe I know this place. Yes, it's old Fezziwig's. I couldn't have worked for a kinder man. Why, it's old Fezziwig himself, and all of my very dearest friends. And that shy lad in the corner, that's me.
Yes, that was before you became a miserable miser, consumed by greed.
Well, nobody's perfect. And there's lovely Isabel.
Ebenezer. Ebenezer.
Yes, Isabel?
My eyes are closed, my lips are puckered, and I'm standing under the mistletoe.
You're also standing on my foot.
Oh, what a merry Christmas this is under the mistletoe. Candlelight and kids and kisses, warmth from the fire's glow. Pretty presents gaily wrapped there under the Christmas tree. What a happy holiday for you.
This moment last a lifetime, or at least till the snowman melts. Soon the evening will be over under the mistletoe. Let us dance the Christmas waltz before it's time to go. Years from now I'll still recall the night so long ago, when a Christmas kiss you gave to me under the mistletoe.
Oh, I remember how much I was in love with her.
In 10 years' time, you learn to love something else.
Why, it's my counting house. 9,972. 9,000...
Ebenezer!
Yes, Isabel, what can I do for you?
For years I've had this honeymoon cottage, Ebenezer. I've been waiting for you to keep your promise to marry me. Now I must know. Have you made your decision?
I have. Your last payment on the cottage was 7 minutes late. I'm foreclosing the mortgage.
You loved your gold more than that precious creature, and you lost her forever.
Please, Spirit, I can no longer bear these memories. Take me home.
Remember, Scrooge, you fashioned these memories yourself. Yourself, 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 yourself.
And in a flash, I was back in my bed. Och, I thought, 'twas but a dream. Here it was past 2 o'clock, and no spirit had appeared. There was no ghost, no Christmas past. The whole thing had been a bad nightmare. But then I became aware of a huge shadow appearing in my room. Suddenly, the room became light. And there was a giant of a man.
I'm sorry I'm late, but I had a problem with a little boy named Jack. What that kid did with a beanstalk, you wouldn't believe.
I had never seen a bigger man or a fatter man.
Have you ever seen a fatter ghost than me? I'm so fat that... I'm so fat that...
How fat are you?
I'm so fat that when I'm in the room, no matter where you look, I am. I am the spirit of Christmas present.
What do you do?
Don't ask me what I do. Ask me what I did.
Okay. What did you did?
I have filled the room with all of the good things that you have withheld from your fellow man. Look.
Spilling out of the huge cornucopia were all manner of exotic foods. Suckling pigs, turkeys, wreaths of sausages, fruitcakes, mince pies, and a prune Danish to go. As I reached for a corned beef on rye, the giant stopped me.
We have no time for that now. We have a long way to travel, and we must fly. Take hold of my robe. Not back there, unless you want to fly tourist.
I took hold of his robe, and we were off. In a moment,
We were at Bob Cratchit's humble cottage. Looking through the window, we beheld the family seated around the dinner table. On Bob's right was his son, Tiny Tim.
What is Cratchit doing? Carving a canary?
What would you expect with the meager wage you bestow upon him? 2 shillings a day?
2 shillings and a halfpenny. He does my laundry.
Listen, Ebenezer Scrooge. Listen.
Don't eat yet, my dear family. There's more to come. On top of this marvelous bird, we have 1 raisin each.
Ooh!
1/2 walnut.
Ah!
2 grapes.
Ooh! Ah!
Now, before we start, let's not forget the man who made this glorious feast possible, Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Please, not when we're eating.
Dear wife, this is the season of goodwill to men. What do you say, Tiny Tim?
I say thank you, Mr. Scrooge. And God bless us, everyone.
That's right. You see, we've got a Christmas tree. It's just as small as a holly sprig, but we got a goose. And it's as tiny as a sparrow.
But we have love.
I guess there won't be any pretty toys to cheer our little girls and boys because, well, our Christmas budget, it's much too narrow.
But we have love, we have love.
They are blessing you, Ebenezer Scrooge. You who have supplied them with such a paltry fare.
Oh, but surely they have more food than that. Look at that huge pot boiling on the stove.
Yeah, that's your laundry.
We don't have everything we want, but we have all we need. Our stockings may be empty, but our hearts are full indeed.
Oh, yes, we've got a pudding. Unfortunately, it's smaller than a single plum. But today, we'll share with one another.
We'll share our love. We have love.
I turned to the spirit. He was gone.
Spirit, where are you? Don't go. You must tell me about Tim.
What's wrong with that kind lad?
Don't go.
Who are you? Are you the ghost of Christmas future?
I feared this specter more than all the others. But he was the ghost of the future, the spirit of things to come. We were back at the Cratchit house. But what a change. No longer were there happy songs coming from within. Looking through the window, I saw the family gathered around the table as before. But now, the chair on Bob Cratchit's right was empty. Tiny Tim was gone.
Spirit of the future, what does this mean? No, no, I didn't want this to be. I wanted Tiny Tim to get well. That sweet, darling boy.
I now found myself in a churchyard, where 2 gravediggers were engaged in their ghoulish occupation.
That does it.
Tamp it down tight, Charlie.
You know, Harold, I never saw a funeral like this one.
Right. There was nobody about. No mourners, no friends. No one to shed a tear or bid him farewell.
Spirit, whose lonely grave is this?
Why, yours, Ebenezer. The richest man in the cemetery.
No, no, I don't want my life to end this way. Another chance. The spirits of Christmas past, present, and future shall live within me. Spirit,
I'll change my ways. No, 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 I'll change. I'll change. I'll change.
Where am I? I'm back in my own bed. And those bells. It must be. It is.
It's Christmas morning. Oh, I want to hear those beautiful bells. I want to see the morning. Yes, I can be a new man. I will honor Christmas in my heart and keep it all the year. Merry Christmas, everybody. What a glorious Christmas morning.
What a glorious Christmas morning. What a day this is going to be. All over the world, the Christmas bells ring out the happiest of Noels. Let's all share this timely thought. It's better to give than receive. What a glorious Christmas morning after our Christmas Eve. Christmas morning, very happiest day of the year, when children's eyes have a special glow from joy that only a child can know. Oh, St. Nick has come to call surprises of this week. What a glorious Christmas morning after our Christmas Eve.
What a wonderful day. Oh, there's so much to do. Oh, so much to do. Oh.
Merry Christmas to one and all.
Oh, well, bless me. Good morning, gentlemen. I've something for you.
20 gold sovereigns. Oh, no.
Not enough? Well, all right. 50 gold sovereigns.
Really, Mr. Scrooge, it's...
Still not enough. Aye, you drive a hard bargain. Here you are. 100 gold pieces, and not a penny more. Not a penny more.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Scrooge. Thank you. And a Merry Christmas to you.
I went to the butcher shop and bought the biggest turkey I could get. Then, with my arms laden with presents, I took myself to the Cratchit cottage.
Mr. Scrooge, what...
I came to tell you, bah humbug. And to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge. Yes, Merry Christmas. Everyone, look who's here. It's Mr. Scrooge.
Yes, it's Mr. Scrooge. And I've brought Christmas presents for you and all the children.
Ooh.
And something for Mrs. Cratchit, too.
Thank you, Mr. Scrooge.
But, Mr. Scrooge, I don't understand.
What do you mean you don't understand? Why, only yesterday you told me Christmas was a time for giving. Well, now I'll tell you what Christmas is. 'Tis a time that once a year, men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and celebrate the joy of the season.
Mr. Scrooge, oh, we're awful glad to see you. Come on and sit for a while by the tree. Take off your hat and coat, and we'll light a fire and warm the house.
Ah, this is the way Christmas ought to be.
It is?
I want to thank you for this lovely welcome.
Oh, you're welcome.
I've learned my lesson well, as you can see. At Christmas time, I've missed so much the love of friends, the family touch. This is the way Christmas ought to be.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Ah, humbug. Ah, humbug. No more of that for me. I've got a brand new song, and I'll sing it happily. Merry, merry, merry Christmas.
Merry, merry, merry Christmas.
So let the bells ring out the Christmas message, and let the carolers sing so merrily.
Now, quoting from Bob Cratchit's son, God bless us, each and every one.
This is the way Christmas ought to be. This is the way,
this is the way
Christmas ought to be.
I just can't believe it.
The next morning, I was early at my counting house. Oh, I was early there. As early as Bob Cratchit was late.
Well, Cratchit.
Good morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Good morning, indeed. You're late, Cratchit. You're 18 minutes late. Have you a guess at what I'm going to do?
You're going to discharge me, sir?
No, I'm going to give you a raise.
A what?
Fetch the coal scuttle, build the fire, warm the counting house. The warmth of Christmas love will dwell in this place every day of the year. Let it be said that no one will ever keep Christmas as well as Ebenezer Scrooge.
And that is that. I hope you enjoyed it, actually. One thing I really, really like about a lot of Christmas stories, like A Christmas Carol or It's a Wonderful Life, or, well, actually, those are really the only two that really talk about this. One concept about some of these stories that I enjoy is the idea, not so much an idea, but the fact that every action that you take, everything you do, every time you interact with people, everything you do affects people in small ways. The world is shaped by your actions and other people's perceptions of your actions. This is an inescapable truth. With A Christmas Carol, the character of Ebenezer Scrooge learns that his actions do affect people more than he realizes. And when confronted with this reality, he repents of that. He goes and becomes a better person. I mean, it's how you react. I mean, every little thing you do affects everyone around you. Despite what people think, that, okay, there is a bit of a trend I have noticed where people tend to be more insular. I think that part of this has happened because of the internet and because we're so connected these days that we're so insular. You see a lot of people, they spend a lot of time on their Facebook profiles or in their social medias being the absolute antithesis of social. In fact, I would say that social media has made us more antisocial because you can create your own little echo chamber where you don't have to go into the realm of wild opinion and find other people or really interact with people that you disagree with or wouldn't normally. It's weird. I believe that what we do, everything from your choices, like everything has a repercussion. I'm the type of person who, if you asked me, I would say yes, the waving of a butterfly wing and across the world would cause typhoons in Japan. That type of thing. You know, the whole concept that everything is in one way or another connected. Every action counts. Where I am affects where other people are or what happens to them. So, like, let's say I'm driving and I cut somebody off. Those little extras, those little seconds, everything counts. I believe that everything is important and that we all influence people in ways that are not evident to us at that time. Now, I was looking through older Christmas stories because I was like, you know, I could read a couple Christmas stories to people. Like if I was looking for an original copy of The Night Before Christmas or the original Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer story. Not the newer adaptations or so, but the original one. Then looking through those, I ran into something kind of interesting. A lot of people, a story that's kind of similar to what you see in The Christmas Carol, where your choices and your choices affect other people, have an effect on other people. And that would be It's a Wonderful Life, which is a Frank Capra film. Frank Capra is responsible for the kind of successful propaganda film Why We Fight, which helped push us through World War II. And then there was Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which is another one of his, which is pretty influential. A lot of people like that one. Now with It's a Wonderful Life, It's a Wonderful Life is based off of a book called The Greatest Gift. Sorry, a short story called The Greatest Gift by Philip Van Doren Stern. And I was looking around to see if I could find an older copy of this, and unfortunately, it is expensive. The audiobook version of it, which is only on cassette, is $135 on Amazon used. The hardcover books, the one from 1996, is being sold on Amazon for almost $500. So you know what I did? I thought, well, that's wrong. So I went and found the text of it, and I think I'm going to preserve it. So yes, I'm going to read you a story now. I know, you've probably tuned out of this already because you're like, oh, gah, radio plays, and now he's going to read me a book? Ugh. No, I think you need to realize something about podcasts, or rather, Radio DMG. I don't make Radio DMG for anybody other than myself. My own personal reasons. And I make these because part of this is one day I hope to have kids. And I hope that I will be there to read them stories. But what if I can't be? By recording myself reading stories or talking about history or making this available, I can be. This is why I do this, so that I can share it. And in a way, I hope that you enjoy it. If you like it, cool. If you don't like it, oh well. But I make this so that there's a record of me. There's something there for other people. Everything I do, everything all of us do, everything that we do affects other people. And I want to affect people. So, I'm going to go ahead and read the short story, The Greatest Gift, by Philip Van Doren Stern. Now, originally, The Greatest Gift had trouble. Philip Van Doren Stern had a problem trying to get people, to getting somebody to publish it. Publish this book, the short story. So instead, he printed 200 copies of the story and used them as Christmas cards. And that's kind of how he got that out. The very first viral marketing. Frank Capra got a hold of the story because it spread like wildfire. I mean, 200 of this little story on a Christmas card sent amongst friends and relatives and other people. And it was so good, the writing was strong enough and affected enough people that they would pass it on to their friends who would read it. And it went viral. This that was how things went viral before the internet. Before you could get a million views on your cat playing the piano song, piano video. This was how you created and how stuff spread. Nowadays, I'm sure this would end up in a little mass email that was sent out to tons of people, and then it would kind of get swept under and ignored. And in a way, that's wrong. Maybe we need to pay more attention to what we're deleting from our inboxes in the future. But yes, let me go ahead and read to you The Greatest Gift by Philip Van Doren Stern. Because honestly, why should you pay $500 on Amazon for this book? Why should anybody have to? I'm reading it. This is my own voice. This is the diminished audio quality, which under the DMCA, I can do. So, yes, I know. People do read those. I do read those. So there we go. Here, I'm going to read to you The Greatest Gift by Philip Van Doren Stern. The Greatest Gift. The little town straggling up the hill was bright with colored Christmas lights, but George Pratt did not see them. He was leaning over the railing of the iron bridge, staring down moodily at the black water. The current eddied and swirled like liquid glass, and occasionally a bit of ice detached from the shore would go sliding downstream to be swallowed up in the shadows under the bridge. The water looked paralyzingly cold. George wondered how long a man could stay alive in it. The glassy blackness had a strange hypnotic effect on him. He leaned still farther over the railing.
"I wouldn't do that if I were you,"
a quiet voice behind him said. George turned resentfully to a little man he had never seen before. He was stout, well past middle-aged, and his round cheeks were pink in the winter air as though they had just been shaved.
"Wouldn't do what?" George said sullenly.
"What you were thinking of doing."
"How do you know what I was thinking of doing?"
"I was thinking." "Oh, we make it our business to know a lot of things," the stranger said easily. George wondered what the man's business was. He was a most unremarkable little person, the sort you would pass in a crowd and never notice, unless you saw his bright blue eyes, that is. You couldn't forget them, for they were the kindest, sharpest eyes you ever saw. Nothing else about him was noteworthy. He wore a moth-eaten old fur cap and a shabby overcoat that was stretched tightly across his punchy belly. He was carrying a small black satchel. It wasn't a doctor's bag. It was too large for that and not the right shape. It was a salesman's sample kit, George decided distastefully. The fellow was probably some sort of peddler, the kind who would go around poking his sharp little nose into other people's affairs.
"Looks like snow, doesn't it?"
the stranger said, glancing up appraisingly at the overcast sky.
"It'll be nice to have a white Christmas. They're getting scarce these days, but so are a lot of things."
He turned to face George squarely.
"You all right now?"
"Of course I'm all right. What made you think I wasn't?" George fell silent before the stranger's quiet gaze. The little man shook his head.
"You know you shouldn't think of such a thing, and on Christmas Eve of all times. You've got to consider Mary, and your mother, too."
George opened his mouth to ask how the stranger could know his wife's name, but the fellow anticipated him.
"Don't ask me how I know such things. It's my business to know them. That's why I came along this way tonight. Lucky I did, too."
He glanced down at the dark water and shuddered.
"Well, if you know so much about me," George said, "give me just one good reason why I should be alive."
The little man made a queer chuckling sound. "Come, come. Can't be that bad. You've got your job at the bank and Mary and the kids. You're healthy, young, and sick of everything," George cried. "I'm stuck here in this mud hole for life, doing the same dull work day after day. Other men are leading exciting lives, but I, well, I'm just a small-town bank clerk that even the army didn't want. I never did anything really useful or interesting, and it looks like as if I never will. I might just as well be dead. I might better be dead. Sometimes I wish I were. In fact, I wish I'd never been born. The little man stood looking at him in the growing darkness. What was that you said? He asked softly. I said I wish I'd never been born, George repeated firmly, and I mean it too. The stranger's pink cheeks glowed with excitement. Why, that's wonderful! You've solved everything. I was afraid you were going to give me some trouble. But now you've got the solution yourself. You wish you'd never been born. All right. Okay, you haven't. What do you mean? George growled. You haven't been born. Just that. You haven't been born. No one here knows you. You have no responsibilities, no job, no wife, no children. Why, you haven't even a mother. You couldn't have. Of course, all your troubles are over. Your wish, I am happy to say, has been granted. Officially. Nuts! George snorted and turned away. The stranger ran after him and caught him by the arm. You'd better take these with you, he said, holding out his satchel. It'll open a lot of doors that might otherwise be slammed in your face. What doors and whose face? George scoffed. I know everybody in this town, and besides, I'd like to see anybody slam a door in my face. Yes, I know, the little man said patiently, but take this anyway. It can't do any harm, and it may help. He opened the satchel and displayed a number of brushes. You'd be surprised how useful these brushes can be as introduction, especially the free ones. These, I mean. He hauled out a plain little hairbrush. I'll show you how to use it. He thrust the satchel into George's reluctant hands and began. When the lady of the house comes to the door, you give her this and then talk fast. You say, Good evening, madam. I'm from the World Cleaning Company, and I want to present you with this handsome and useful brush absolutely free. No obligation to purchase anything at all. After that, of course, it's a cinch. Now you try it. He forced the brush into George's hand. George promptly dropped the brush into his satchel and fumbled with the catch, finally closing it with an angry snap. Here, he said, and then stopped abruptly, but for there was no one in sight. The little stranger must have slipped away into the bushes, growing along the river bank, George thought. He certainly wasn't going to play hide-and-seek with him. It was nearly dark, and getting colder every minute, he shivered and turned up his coat collar. The street lights had been turned on, and Christmas candles in the windows glowed softly. The little town looked remarkably cheerful after all. The place you grew up in was the one spot on earth where you could really feel at home. George felt a sudden burst of affection even for crotchety old Hank Biddle, whose house he was passing. He remembered the quarrel he had had when his car had scraped a piece of bark out of Hank's big maple tree. George looked up at the vast spread of leafless branches towering over him in the darkness. The tree must have been growing there since Indian times. He felt a sudden twinge of guilt for the damage he had done. He'd never stopped to inspect the wound, for he was ordinarily afraid to have Hank catch him even looking at the tree. Now he stepped out boldly into the roadway to examine the huge trunk. Hank must have repaired the scar or painted it over, for there was no sign of it. George struck a match and bent down to look more closely. He straightened up with an odd, sinking feeling in his stomach. There wasn't any scar. The bark was smooth and undamaged. He remembered what the little man at the bridge had said. It was all nonsense, of course, but the non-existent scar bothered him. When he reached the bank, he saw that something was wrong. The building was dark, and he knew he had turned the fault light on. He noticed, too, that someone had left the window shades up. He ran around to the front. There was a battered old sign fastened on the door. George could just make out the words. For rent or sale, apply James Silva, Real Estate. Perhaps it was some boy's trick, he thought wildly. Then he saw a pile of ancient leaves and tattered newspapers in the bank's ordinarily immaculate doorway, and the windows looked as though they hadn't been washed in years. A light was still burning across the street in Jim Silva's office. George dashed over and tore the door open. Jim looked up from his ledger book in surprise. "What can I do for you, young man?" he said in a polite voice he reserved for potential customers. "The bank," George said breathlessly. "What's the matter with it?" "The old bank building?" Jim Silva turned around and looked out of the window. "Nothing that I can see. Wouldn't like to rent or buy it, would you?" "You mean it's out of business? For a good 10 years went bust. Strange around these parts, ain't you?" George sagged against the wall. I was here some time ago," he said weakly. "The bank was all right then. I even knew some of the people who work there."
"Didn't you know a feller named Marty Jenkins, did you?"
"Marty Jenkins? Why, he..." George was about to say that Marty had never worked at the bank. Couldn't have. In fact, for when they had both left school, they had applied for a job there, and George had gotten it. But now, of course, things were different. He would have to be careful.
No, I didn't know him," he said slowly.
"Not really, that is. I'd heard of him."
"Then maybe you heard how he skipped out with $50,000, and that's why the bank went broke. Pretty near ruined everybody around here." Silva was looking at him sharply. "I was hoping for a minute maybe you'd know where he is. I'd lost plenty in that crash myself. We'd like to get our hands on Marty Jenkins."
Didn't he have a brother? Seems to me he had a brother named Arthur."
"Art? Oh, sure, but he's all right. You don't know where his brother went. It had a terrible effect on him, too. Took to drink, he did. It's too bad, and hard on his wife. He married a nice girl."
George felt that sinking feeling in his stomach again.
Who did he marry?"
he demanded hoarsely. Both he and Art had courted Mary.
"Girl named Mary Thatcher," Silva said cheerfully. "She lives up on the hill just this side of the church. Hey, where are you going?"
But Georgia bolted out of the office. He ran past the empty bank building and turned up the hill. For a moment, he thought of going straight to Mary. The house next to church had been given them by her father as a wedding present. Naturally, Art Jenkins would have gotten it if he had married Mary. George wondered whether they had any children. Then he knew he couldn't face Mary, not yet anyway. He decided to visit his parents and find out more about her. There were candles burning in the windows of the little weather-beaten house on the side street, and a Christmas wreath was hanging on the glass panel in the front door. George raised the gate latch with a loud click. A dark shape on the porch jumped up and began to growl. Then it hurled itself down the steps, barking ferociously. "Brownie!" George shouted. "Brownie, you old fool, stop that, don't you know me?" But the dog advanced menacingly and drove him back behind the gate. The porch light snapped on, and George's father stepped out to call the dog off. The barking subsided to a low, angry growl. His father held the dog by the collar while George cautiously walked past. He could see that his father did not know him.
"Is the lady of the house in?" he asked.
His father waved toward the door. "Go on in," he said cordially. "I'll chain this dog up. She can be mean with strangers." His mother, who was watching in the hallway, obviously did not recognize him. George opened his sample kit and grabbed the first brush that came to hand.
"Good evening, ma'am," he said politely. "I'm from the World Cleaning Company. We are giving out a free sample brush. I thought you might like to have one. No obligation at all."
His voice faltered. His mother smiled at his awkwardness. "I suppose you'll want to sell me something. I'm not really sure I need any brushes."
"No, I'm not selling anything," he assured her.
"The regular salesman will be around in a few days. It's just, well, just a Christmas present from the company."
"How nice," she said. "You people never gave away such good brushes before."
"This is a special offer," he said. His father entered the hall and closed the door.
"Won't you come in for a while and sit down?" his mother said. "You must be tired walking so much."
"Thank you, ma'am. I don't mind if I do." He entered the little parlor and put his bag down on the floor. The room looked different somehow, although he could not figure out why. "I used to know this town pretty well," he said to make conversation. "Knew some of the townspeople. I remember a girl named Mary Thatcher. She married Art Jenkins, I heard. You must know them." "Of course," his mother said. "We know Mary well."
"Any children?"
he asked casually.
"Two,
a boy and a girl."
George sighed audibly.
"My, you must be tired," his mother said. "Perhaps I can get you a cup of tea."
"No, don't bother," he said. "I'll be having supper soon."
I looked around the little parlor, trying to find out why it looked different. Over the mantelpiece hung a framed photograph which had been taken on his kid brother Harry's 16th birthday. You remember how they'd gone to Potter's studio to be photographed together? There was something queer about the picture. It showed only one figure, Harry's.
"That's your son?" he asked.
His mother's face clouded. She nodded, but said nothing. "I think I met him, too," George said hesitantly. "His name's Harry, isn't it?" His mother turned away, making a strange choking noise in her throat. Her husband put his arm clumsily around her shoulder. His voice, which was always mild and gentle, suddenly became harsh.
"You couldn't have met him," he said. "He's been dead a long while. He was drowned the day that picture was taken."
George's mind flew back to the long-ago August afternoon when he and Harry had visited Potter's studio. On their way home, they had gone swimming. Harry had been seized with a cramp, he remembered. He had pulled him out of the water and had thought nothing of it. But suppose he hadn't been there?
I'm sorry, he said miserably. I guess I'd better go. I hope you like the brush, and I wish you both a very Merry Christmas.
There he had put his foot in it again, wishing them a Merry Christmas when they were thinking about their dead son. Brownie tugged fiercely at her chain as George went down the porch steps and accompanied his departure with a hostile, rolling growl. He wanted desperately now to see Mary. He wasn't sure he could stand not being recognized by her, but he had to see her. The lights were on in the church, and the choir was making last-minute preparations for Christmas vespers. The organ had been practicing Holy Night, evening after evening, until George had become thoroughly sick of it, but now the music almost tore his heart out. He stumbled blindly up the path to his own house. The lawn was untidy, and the flower bushes he kept carefully trimmed were neglected and badly sprouted. Aunt Jenkins could hardly be expected to care for such things. When he knocked at the door, there was a long silence, followed by the shout of a child. Then Mary came to the door. At the sight of her, George's voice almost failed him. "Merry Christmas, ma'am," he managed to say at last. His hand shook as he tried to open the satchel. When George entered the living room, unhappy as he was, he could not help noticing with a secret grin that the too high-priced blue sofa they had often had quarreled over was there. Evidently, Mary had gone through the same thing with Art Jenkins and had won the argument with him, too. George got his satchel open. One of the brushes had a bright blue handle and very colored bristles. It was obviously a brush not intended to be given away, but George didn't care. He handed it to Mary. "This would be fine for your sofa," he said.
"My, that's a pretty brush," she exclaimed. "You're giving it away free?"
He nodded solemnly. "Special introductory offer. It's one way for the company to keep excess profits down. Share them with its friends." She stroked the sofa gently with the brush, soothing out the velvety nap. "It is a nice brush. Thank you. There was a sudden scream from the kitchen, and two small children rushed in. A little homely-faced girl flung herself into her mom's arms, sobbing loudly, as a boy of 7 came running after her, snapping a toy pistol at her head.
"Mommy, she won't die," he yelled. "I shot her 100 times, but she won't die."
He looked just like Art Jenkins, George thought. Acts like him, too. The boy suddenly turned his attention to him. "Who are you?" he demanded belligerently. He pointed his pistol at George and pulled the trigger. "You're dead," he cried. "You're dead. Why don't you fall down and die?" There was a heavy step on the porch. The boy looked frightened and backed away. George saw Mary glance apprehensively at the door. Art Jenkins came in. He stood for a moment in the doorway, clinging to the knob for support. His eyes were glazed and his face was very red. "Who's this?" he demanded thickly. "He's a brush salesman," Mary tried to explain. "He gave me this brush."
"Brush salesman?" Art sneered. "Well, tell him to get out of here. We don't want no brushes."
Art hiccuped violently and lurched across the room to the sofa, where he sat down suddenly.
"And we don't want no brush salesman, neither."
George looked despairingly at Mary. Her eyes were begging him to go. Art had lifted his feet up on the sofa and was sprawling out on it, muttering unkind things about brush salesmen. George went to the door, followed by Art's son, who kept snapping the pistol at him and saying, "You're dead, dead, dead!" Perhaps the boy was right, George thought when he reached the porch. Maybe he was dead, or maybe this was all a bad dream from which he might eventually wake. He wanted to find the little man on the bridge again and tried to persuade him to cancel the whole deal. He hurried down the hill and broke into a run when he neared the river. George was relieved to see the little stranger standing on the bridge. "I've had enough," he gasped. "Get me out of this. You got me into it." The stranger raised his eyebrows. "I got you into it? I like that. You were granted your wish. You got everything you asked for. You're the freest man on earth now. You have no ties. You can go anywhere, do anything. What more could you possibly want?"
"Change me back," George pleaded. "Change me back, please. Not just for my sake, but for others, too. You don't know what a mess this town is in. You don't understand. I've got to get back. They need me there."
"I understand right enough," the stranger said slowly. I just wanted to make sure you did. You had the greatest gift of all conferred upon you. The gift of life, of being a part of this world and taking a part in it. Yet you denied that gift." As the stranger spoke, the church bell high up on the hill sounded, calling the townspeople to Christmas vespers. Then the downtown church bell started ringing.
"I've got to get back," George said desperately. "You can't cut me off like this. Why, it's murder."
"Suicide, rather, wouldn't you say?" the stranger murmured. "You brought it on yourself. However, since it's Christmas Eve, well, anyway, close your eyes and keep listening to the bells." His voice sank lower. "Keep listening to the bells." George did as he was told. He felt a cold, wet snowdrop touch his cheek, and then another and another. When he opened his eyes, the snow was falling fast, so fast that it obscured everything around him. The little stranger could not be seen, but then neither could anything else. The snow was so thick that George had to grope for the bridge railing. As he started toward the village, he thought he heard someone saying "Merry Christmas," but the bells were drowning out all rival sounds, so he could not be sure. When he reached Hank Biddle's house, he stopped and walked out into the roadway, peering down anxiously at the base of the big maple tree. The scar was there, thank heaven! He touched the tree affectionately. He'd have to do something about the wound, get a tree surgeon or something. Anyway, he'd evidently been changed back. He was himself again. Maybe it was all a dream, or perhaps he'd been hypnotized by the smooth flowing black water. He'd heard of such things. At the corner of Main and Bridge Streets, he had almost collided with a hurrying figure. It was Jim Silva, the real estate agent.
"Hello, George," Jim said cheerfully. "Late tonight, ain't you? I should think you'd want to be home early on Christmas Eve."
George drew a long breath. "I just wanted to see if the bank is all right. I've got to make sure the vault light is on."
"Sure, it's on. I saw it as I went past."
"Let's look, huh?" George said, pulling at Silva's sleeve. He wanted the assurance of a witness. He dragged the surprised real estate dealer around to the front of the bank where the light was gleaming through the falling snow.
"I told you it was on," Silva said with some irritation.
"I had to make sure," George mumbled. "Thanks and Merry Christmas." Then he was off like a streak, running up the hill. He was in a hurry to get home, but not in such a hurry that he couldn't stop for a moment at his parents' house, where he wrestled with Brownie until the friendly old bulldog waggled all over with delight. He grasped his startled brother's hand and wrung it frantically, wishing him an almost hysterical Merry Christmas. Then he dashed across the parlor to examine a certain photograph. He kissed his mother, joked with his father, and was out of the house a few seconds later, stumbling and slipping on the new fallen snow as he ran on up the hill. The church was bright with light, and the choir and the organ were going full tilt. George flung the door to his home open and called out at the top of his voice, "Mary, where are you? Mary, kids!" His wife came toward him, dressed for going to church, and making gestures to silence him. "I've just put the children to bed," she protested. "Now they'll..." But not another word could she get out of her mouth, for he smothered it with kisses, and then dragged her up to the children's room, where he violated every tenet of parental behavior by madly embracing his son and his daughter and waking them up thoroughly. It was not until Mary got him downstairs that he began to be coherent.
"I thought I lost you. Oh, Mary, I thought I lost you."
"What's the matter, darling?" she asked in bewilderment. He pulled her down on the sofa and kissed her again, and then, just as he was about to tell her about his queer dream, his fingers came in contact with something lying on the seat of the sofa. His voice froze. He did not even have to pick the thing up. He knew what it was, and he knew that it would have a blue handle and very colored bristles. The end. So, yeah, that's the story that It's a Wonderful Life is based off of. And... for one, it's way too expensive, so I thought I would go ahead and provide it to you, my listener. You just have to put up with me reading it. But yes, that's the first of our three episodes. The next one is all newsy focused, and then we have a semi-Christmassy, glorious excess. So, this is your host, Philip Wesley, for Radio DMG. And good day, good night, Merry Christmas. And God bless us, one and all. Blight by Edna St. Vincent Millay. Hard seeds of hate I planted, that should by now be grown, rough stalks and from thick stamens a poison pollen blown, and odors rank unbreathable from dark corolla's throne. At dawn from my damp garden I shook the chilly dew, the thin boughs locked behind me that sprang to let me through. The blossom slept, I sought a place where nothing lovely grew. And there, when day was breaking, I knelt and looked around. The light was near, the silence was palpitant with sound. I drew my hate from out my breast and thrust it in the ground. O ye so fiercely tended, ye little seeds of hate, I bent above your growing, early and noon and late. Yet are ye drooped and pitiful, I cannot rear ye straight. The sun seeks out my garden, no nook is left in shade, no mist nor mould nor mildew endures on any blade. Sweet rain slants under every bough, ye falter and ye fade.